Blog Talk Radio.
Special technique. Special technique of shadow boxing.
What's going on, folks? You're listening live here on the Boxing Source Radio Show, here on the MRN Broadcasting Channel on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, James Bell, and the number to dial in to talk boxing live is 347-237-5539. Once again, 347-237-5539. Press the one key to get on queue, and you'll be able to talk live on the show. We got a few topics to go through here on this 1 hour live segment of the show. But before we get into it, we will get through a few commercials and then get back to the show. Once again, here, this is a Boxing Source Radio Show on the MRN Broadcasting Channel on Blog Talk Radio.
Football talk like you've never heard it before. Possibly one of the funniest podcasts in sports today. That's right, the CMT Firestorm Football Talk Show every Wednesday night at 8:30 p.m. right here on Blog Talk Radio. We have Cali Mike, Chi-Town, Carcell Mathis, and the Mouth of the South, Tony Watley. They give you a different perspective of football that may not be found anywhere else. You may also catch the callers with some classic lines as well.
There's a black olive.
What is it?
I don't know. I don't know exactly what it is off the top of my head.
Okay, I know you're in front of your computer right now. Look it up.
I'm about to look it up right now, all right?
National blackout level.
I never said national blackout level, liar.
Yes, you did.
No, I didn't.
Okay, Florida blackout level. Whatever blackout level you want to look up, look it up. I'll wait.
You can't compare a fifth-year quarterback to a 20-year quarterback. How do you compare Cam Newton to Peyton Manning? That's impossible.
I don't even think Cam Newton's going to get a contract extension.
Tampa Bay Buccaneers are the worst franchise in the National Football League. The worst franchise in the National Football League.
The difference between Jameis Winston, Matt Ryan, and Cam Newton is Jameis Winston has the ability to lead a team to a championship.
Once again, people, the CMT Firestorm Football Talk Show every Wednesday night on the MRN Broadcast Network.
Jameis Winston is just stupid.
Hey, all, this is Matthew Long with the Cold Hard Truth on Sports and the Triangle Offense. I just wanted to take some time to tell you about Pest Bear, a wonderful company. They've been around for 20-plus years. They have over 11 branches in Florida. Great licensed, certified specialists, and guess what? They do more than pest control. They also take care of termites as well as lawn care, sprinkler systems, and much, much more. Call today, 1-800-PESTBEAR. That's 1-800-737-8232.
WCSB Sports and MRN Broadcasting, powered by blogtalkradio.com.
on the Boxing Source Radio Show here on the MRN Broadcasting Channel on Blog Talk Radio. Number to dial in to talk boxing live is 347-237-5539. That is 347-237-5539. Question one key to get on cue, and you'll be able to talk live on the show. All right. We're pretty much going to get into the talk here for the weekend of the sports world. And we just got something here within the course of the past week where the Premier Boxing Champions banner announced a series of fights that are coming up on their schedule here to close out the 2016 year and open up the 2017 season. This is something that they usually have done well, they did here after their first full season in their second season, as you know, we had like a little bit of a lull, and then after that, you know, we had fights where Deontay Wilder faced Artur Spilka. Danny Garcia was able to fight for the WBC welterweight championship against Robert the Ghost Guerrero, and so on and so forth. So they're pretty much doing the same thing here by announcing their schedules here for the 2016 and 2017 early season. And so, you know, by doing that, what they did was they've come up with a couple of intriguing matchups that, you know, we're looking forward to. We're going to be getting into it here as we have a couple of matchups happening within the Galen Center in Los Angeles, California, is going to be on December 10th. The card is headlined by two title fights, as we have the WBA World Featherweight title on the line, the regular featherweight title on the line, as Jesus Andres Cuellar goes up against Abner Mares. There at featherweight, you have Jesus Cuellar there at 28 wins with only one single loss that happened back in 2011 against Oscar Escandón. He's pretty much been, you know, at featherweight for a majority of his career. He's won, you know, minor belts there at featherweight, and then, you know, back in 2013 he won the interim WBA regular, or the regular interim belt there at featherweight before winning the WBA belt against Vic D'Artagnan in 2015 with a TKO victory. He's had one fight after that to defend that belt against Jonathan Oquendo, winning a unanimous decision there, and hadn't fought in a full year. And so he's going to get this fight here against Abner Mares. And Abner Mares, his last fight was a loss to then the WBA featherweight super champion, Leo Santa Cruz. And he lost a majority decision to him in a pretty good fight back in August of 2015. And he hadn't been able to get back in the ring for pretty much over a year. And then now he's getting another shot here to, you know, get a featherweight belt against Jesus Cuellar. It's pretty much going to be a good back and forth fight between these two. Yeah, Mares there, you know, 5'4.5" with a 66-inch total reach, and then you have Cuellar, who's a little bit taller there at 5'6", with a 68-inch reach there. So from the measurement standpoint, height and reach, arm reach, Cuellar has the advantages. But, you know, Marquez seems to have had the, you know, better competition over the course of his career. He did face Leo Santa Cruz, who was, you know, a little bit taller and had a longer reach than Jesus Cuellar does. So he's trying to see here if he's going to be able to get into the inside against Cuellar and have, you know, better success against Cuellar than he did against Leo Santa Cruz. Pretty much, I say this is a kind of like a crossroads fight for Abner Marquez, you know, to see if he's going to be able to stay within the featherweight, the top in the featherweight division, to try to see if he can get back at Leo Santa Cruz or eventually challenge Carl Frampton or, you know, other people that are out there within the featherweight division. It's still, you know, a fairly good division there. Like I said, you do have Leo Santa Cruz there. You do have Carl Frampton there. Gary Russell Jr. is still out there. Lee Selby is also out there at the featherweight division. And looking to see if Lee Selby is going to get a pretty big fight overseas here against a certain belt holder. But we're going to be talking about who that other guy would have been here a little bit later on. But like I said, we have Abner Marquez against Jesus Cuellar for the WBA regular featherweight championship on December 10th at the USC Galen Center in Los Angeles, California. What's going to be another fight there at the Galen Center is one fight that, you know, I've been looking forward to since May of this year. You have the IBF Super Welterweight Championship on the line as Jermall Charlo defends that belt against Julian J-Rock Williams. Yeah, both of these guys undefeated, with Charlo there at 24-0 and J-Rock at 22-0-1. And these are, you know, guys that, you know, pretty much fill out the super welterweight division. They're both, you know, valid guys, or you know how they use the quote small. As far as like people within the weight class, you can't really say that about these two fighters. J-Rock Williams is a valid guy there at 154 pounds. And you have Jermall Charlo there at the 154-pound division in his last fight that he had against Austin Trout. I really thought that he looked like a full-fledged middleweight in there at the ring, at the very least. He looked much bigger than Austin Trout in that particular fight. I think that, you know, Julian Williams is really going to be prepared for this fight. They look like they were supposed to have it coming up on that was going to be on September 23rd, but they couldn't make that happen. They had like a little mandate to try to get the fight put together. They were saying that it could have been, you know, someplace like, you know, closer to the East Coast, but they weren't able to, you know, pull that out. So Premier Boxing Champions got this card here with the IBF Super Welterweight Championship put on the line there with Charlo and Williams and Cuellar going up against Abner Marquez. This will be televised on Showtime, and the promoters for it are Tom Brown of TGB Promotions and Richard Schaefer of Ringstar Sports. And so course, as many of y'all know, Richard Schaefer used to be the basically the right-hand man of Golden Boy Promotions there alongside Oscar De La Hoya. One of the most notable fights that he was, that I would say he was responsible for, is that 2013 mega fight between Floyd Mayweather Jr. and Saul Canelo Alvarez. So seeing Schaefer getting back into the game and coming through with this fight card here is showing some people that Schaefer is, you know, back at it, and he's ready to, you know, bring some good cards to the sport of boxing. All right, we got area code 205 here with us. What's going on?
What's going on, James? It's my baby, man. How you doing?
Doing good here there, Mike. You know, just going over the announcement that Premier Boxing Champions had over the, earlier this week with a few fight cards coming up, and I just touched on the first set that's coming up on December 10th with the major events being Jesus Square against Abner Mares for the WBA regular featherweight title and Jamar Charlo versus Julian J. Rock Williams for Charlo's IBF Super Welterweight Championship. You got any quick thoughts about either one of those fights?
Have they fought before? Abner
Mares?
No.
No.
Okay.
They're not.
Yeah. I think that'll be a good fight. I have to look at Cuellar's fights again just to kind of brush up, you know, because I think he has some big wins, right?
He did defeat Vic Darchinian by TKO on that was June of 2015. That's one of his notable wins. He also fought and defeated Juan Manuel Lopez back in 2014 for the interim version of the WBA belt and won that by KO.
Okay. I kind of do remember him. He has like sort of like a bald head, right?
Not necessarily. He's kind of like a short. Short buzz cut.
Okay, short cut. All right, yeah. But I definitely think that the Charlo versus J-Rock fight will definitely be a good fight. I'm definitely leaning toward J-Rock due to, I don't know, just his ability to seemingly control the ring. And yeah, he hadn't been in a fight that necessarily tested him to the top level of his ability, but it seems that the Charlo brother kind of goes off of his ability too much, like his power and, you know, that type of thing a little too much versus J-Rock. You know, he uses the power when it's time, but, you know, he does the things to set up the power, like you know, the jab and all that stuff. And I think this Charlo brother is one of the ones who, you know, don't jab as much, you know. So I definitely think that's going to bite him when it comes to J-Rock, when he can get touched with something that'll hurt him.
All right, true. So you're saying that there with Jamal Charlo, that he does have the size and the power, but he doesn't have, you know, as much skill as Julian Williams would have.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
Cool. All right, we got another caller in here, area code 813. What's going on with you?
Hey, what up, though? What up, Big James? What up, Big Mad Mike? One thing about this fight, the Charlo-Williams fight, is that the Charlo boy has already said that he will more than likely move up to middleweight after this fight. And while, of course, if he's outgrowing, if it's super hard for him to make 154, I understand that. But for me, I kind of question that statement and the timing of that statement. It's like, are you saying that because you think there's a good chance you might lose a fight and you might make a statement like, if you do lose a fight, are you going to say, well, it was so hard for me to make 154, I'm killing myself, that contributed in me losing a fight. Is that what you're trying to prep us for? Or are you really that big where you can't make 54 no more? You know, it doesn't make sense for you to do. So I really question that statement and the timing of that statement. Like, why would you kind of say that, put that out there before you got a fight with a guy that you know that's hungry and a guy that's been after a title shot for a long time? So kind of gives me a little pause, but nevertheless, it's going to be a great fight, and even nothing else going forward to it, to the weigh-in. I hope that through the 30-day weigh-in and to the actual weigh-in itself, hope I don't see any issues. And but at the same time, I would not be surprised if we did see some weigh-in issues with Charlo as far as not making weight. That, like, to give me an excuse on trying to throw the fight off or just have an effect, which numerous fighters do before.
I would find that interesting as well. Go ahead there, Mike.
So I'm going to say my comment from someone who has done this weight thing, like cutting weight, like limited, on a limited basis. But these guys got enough money to hire a nutritionist to lose weight, you know, even if it is, uncomfortable weight over a, you know, sustained period of time, a longer period of time. So, I mean, I don't think that's an excuse. Like, unless you're 200 pounds and you're going down to like 155 or 154 or something like that, which is kind of probably what Canelo does. But these guys can hide this Christmas and help them lose the weight, though.
Well, even speaking on that, look at this example right here. Mayweather Marquez, when they fought, it was supposed to be at, what, 140, I think. At the time, I believe. 143. All right. And now we know Mayweather stays in shape year round. And I'm sure this guy definitely has a nutritionist, right? But for this fight, he didn't make the weight. He paid a penalty fee, came in over the fight, came in way over the contracted weight. The fight still went on. Now, and the funny thing about it, if Mayweather would have made the weight, he still would have dominated Marquez either way. But nevertheless, he didn't make the weight. And yes, he was stronger in ring. And that certainly played into a part of his performance. So it's kind of hard to say that. Sometimes these guys just don't do it. They just don't make the weight because they don't want to drain themselves, you know. So it's just kind of funny. It's kind of funny that you brought that up.
I mean, that's actually a great example. That's actually, and there have been plenty of examples where people say that, you know, they did everything they could and they can't make the weight. So I am kind of making it more generalized in that, like, you should be able to do it. But, I mean, you're right. At some point, you probably should do how much weight you can lose if you're already, you know, fighting at a lower weight than what what your normal walking weight is.
Right. And, I mean, the thing is with you know, Jermall Charlo is that it's almost like he's kind of reluctant to, you know, be the, preparing himself for this fight. Now, like I was saying earlier in reference to Charlo's fight against Austin Trout, he came into that fight looking like almost like a middleweight or a super middleweight against Trout. And you saw it, you vividly saw it there. And I would question as to why he didn't, you know, go ahead and move up after that fight. I mean, the thing is, they were talking about, you know, the winner of Charlo Trout fighting Julian J. Rock Williams then. So he knew what the deal was, you know, in May. So for me, I don't understand why it would take him, you know, that long to actually inquire about, you know, going up against J. Rock Williams when you knew what your weight situation was going to be.
And just my other question too, just in what is the state of the other brother, Charlo brother? Is he gaining weight as well? Hoffman to make 154. What's going on with him? And while a lot of times twins mirror each other. And so, like I said, it's the other Charlo boy. He's having trouble making weight too. What's up with that? Just curious.
Well, I mean, going by his last fight against Jackson, he didn't look like he, you know, was having trouble making weight or not. I mean, he seemed like he was, you know, good enough as far as, like, his body is concerned to handle the weight. He didn't necessarily come in there, you know, either to the ring overweight or anything like that. So I was thinking he would be, you know, kind of okay, but I haven't seen anything as far as like an upcoming match for Jermell Charlo here. So I don't know what's going on with them that much. Coming in here, number to dial in is 347-237-5539 to talk boxing. 347-237-5539, press 1 key to get on cue, and you'll be able to talk in live on the show. I'm just continuing into the announcement about Premier Boxing Champions announcing their late 2016, early 2017 broadcast season. Just went through this card here on December 10th. That's going to be at USC's campus in Los Angeles. And the next thing that I'm going to go into that they've announced is the rematch between Carl Frampton and Leo Santa Cruz. This is for the WBA Featherweight Super Championship, as the Koya Armaris fight is for the regular title. You know, we have the this is a rematch of what happened over at the Barclays Center in July, where Carl Frampton basically out-hustled and outworked Leo Santa Cruz to get a majority decision. I think it should have been like a unanimous decision, because I didn't really see Leo Santa Cruz getting the better of Carl Frampton in this fight. And so Santa Cruz gets another opportunity to get the title back from Carl Frampton here on January 28th. Just seeing what's your thoughts real quick. I'll start off with Terrell on it.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to this fight. At the same time, like I said before, Santa Cruz has definitely been one of my favorite fighters for quite some time, and I'm still disappointed and him taking his loss. I mean, losses do come. That's the pro ranks. That's what happens. Lose some, win some. Me personally, and I've been a big fan of his because of his style. And I know he didn't face totally great fighters coming up and getting to his record and getting to his title, but he didn't. It's not like he was a soft guy facing soft opposition. So I'm very looking forward to this fight. At the same time, I really hope he can get his title back. I mean, it's going to be an all-action fight again, once again. One point I made before in the show, sometimes when you take a loss, or take your first loss, you get a time to sit down, replan, refocus, and watch what you didn't do and make that better. And this very well may be an opportunity for Santa Cruz to do that. So me personally, I want the guy to get his title back. And as a side note, it's pretty funny that what's the guy that fought in Puerto Rico? Juan Manuel Marquez, I believe his name is. He wants to get in line to be
talking about that.
Yeah, he just wanted to get in line to be the face of winner of this fight, which I don't think he's credible to do that. I'm not even sure if he's ranked appropriately in that organization, but it's just pretty funny though. But for me, like, mm-hmm. I want Santa Cruz to get his title back. That's, I always love the style.
All right. Go ahead here. My greeting. I'm gonna add another caller here in a moment.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to the fight. From what I saw with what Frampton offered, I think it should be the same outcome. I will say I have to go back and look at the fight again to have a definitive answer on that. But from my first evaluation of the fight, I thought Frampton definitely controlled the action, and I didn't get anything from Santa Cruz that, you know, that if they did it again, that, you know, Frampton wouldn't take it again. But I'll have to punch that again just to be definitive on that one.
All right, cool. All right, and we got area code 202 on the line with us. What's going on?
What's going on, fellas? Just checking in.
Hey there, World Rank. What's going on with you?
Not much, man. Just checking in, man. I haven't really followed the boxing scene for a minute, so I guess it's the last time we talked, so just want to catch up with y'all, see what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, we had pretty much a couple, 2 week hiatus earlier in October, and then we just got back into it. Hold on a second. I think we just got back into it here like a couple of weeks ago. But, you know, right now we're just going over what's happening with the thing here with Premier Boxing Champions. So we've been going over what's happening on December 10th as you have Jesus Square against Abner Mares, J-Rock Williams against Jermall Charlo, and then now here coming up in January is the rematch between Carl Frampton and Gil Santa Cruz. Just seeing here real quick, world ranked. I think you may be outside here for a little bit, so I have to see if I could put you on mute here to minimize the background noise. Probably get you back in here within a couple minutes, and then you could you know, get in as far as like the that rematch between Santa Cruz and Carl Frampton, and also the card that's coming up on December 10th. Just real quick here, if y'all are listening here on live through the MRN Broadcasting Channel, you could also get into Talk Live Boxing. 347-237-5539. That is 347-237-5539. Press 1 key to get on queue, and you'll be able to talk live on the show. That rematch between Carl Frampton and Leo Santa Cruz will be January 28th at the MGM at Las Vegas. So first fight was over there at the Barclays. Now they're taking it over to the West Coast. There in Las Vegas, so we're going to see they're going to be able to do that. Next up in that Premier Boxing Champions Slater schedule that they had 2 weeks after the rematch between Frampton and Santa Cruz, seems like we will have the return of Adrian Broner. The Can Man will be back in action as he will be taking on Adrian Granados. Adrian Granados is a guy that's a, you know, pretty gritty fighter. He's won his past five fights. He's most notable for upsetting then undefeated Amir Imam by TKO victory. And that was like back in 2015, late 2015. And so he's had one fight after that TKO victory. And now they're putting him in the ring here against Adrian Broner on February 11th. No, this isn't the expected match between Broner and Ricky Burns that some people were talking about. But at least it's something to try to get Adrian Broner back in the ring since his April 1st victory against Ashley Theophane that was here at the DC Armory. So, starting with Mike Grady, what's your thoughts about, you know, Broner being able to get back into the ring? And if this is, I mean, this is basically a stay busy fight, and if he's going to be able to fight the likes of like a Ricky Burns for the title that Broner held before fighting Theophane and ended up being overweight. So what's your thoughts on it?
Hadn't really seen his opponent, but I'll take your word for it that it's the safest opponent that he can face moving forward here. I think that if he's going to fight this type of opponent, he better do what he did to Theophane. And, you know, he needs to start, like, kind of backing up what he said is that he's back, you know, he's coming with a vengeance and he's going to hurt some people. So, I mean, he needs to show off and show, you know, show people that if he does fight the likes of a Danny Garcia or something like that, he'll bring something to the table and, you know, and hurt some of these guys. Or win, how about that?
That's All right, dear Terrell, what you got to say on it?
Yeah, I tell you, I was kind of disappointed that the Broner, what's the guy from England, Frampton, Ricky Burns, right?
Right, Ricky Burns.
Yeah, I was actually very hopeful that they can secure that fight. With Ricky Burns come off that loss from Frampton. And even at that point, he said he wanted to come here to stateside to increase his presence in boxing and just to increase his audience and his profile. So I was glad to hear that. He basically, I'm not saying he called Broner out, but hey, nevertheless, he in a sense called him out and won that fight. And it seemed like a good high-level fight for both people. So I'm not sure how that didn't come to fruition. Nevertheless, Broner's getting a fight. Like Mike said, I don't know much about this guy. I'm going to definitely research him before that fight comes into play. But, I mean, I'm glad to see Broner back in the ring and not having stuff going on outside the ring. But, I mean, it sounds like it's going to be a tough fight. It's at 140, right? What is it at?
Yes, yeah, at 140.
Yeah, and I've said many times before, I think that's Broner's best weight. I don't think he should have any future aspirations to go to 147. He belongs at 135, 140. You know, with his size, things like that. So sounds like gonna be a tough fight for both people.
True. All right, we're gonna see if we can get World Rank back on here. I'd say a little while. Let's see, World Rank, you still here with us?
Yeah, I'm still here with you guys.
All right, cool.
So, Granados, I feel like it's a guy because of the Imam fight. He should get an opportunity. You know, he's paid his dues. He has, I think, like 23 fights or something to that. Coming off that big win, he hasn't really been active. So, you know, I'm glad for him. You know, I was looking at some of the boxing boards and saying, you know, prior to this fight being made, that he was, you know, basically asking for opportunities, just anybody at 140, just give him an opportunity. So, you know, he finally gets his opportunity, to make some money off the Imam upset. For Broner, I don't, you know, this is the same level as the Theofane fight, so I don't know what he gains by this. You know, I was hoping that it would be, you know, Ricky Burns fight. You know, that fight's been, you know, talked about for like 5, 6, 7 years since he was at 130. So, it's a decent style matchup. I don't know what it does for Broner's career with the win. I know Granados, you know, this is the opportunity. He's going to try to make the most of it with his come forward style. So I expect a good fight. I expect a competitive fight. But, of course, I think Broner, you know, the more talented fighter, more experience on the world level. I think it's going to be a good style fight, though.
Yeah, I think it will be a gritty fight between Broner and Granados. You know, that Granados' game, you know, those that have, you know, seen Granados in his past few fights or so know that he's going to be able to you know, try to take it to Broner, even if he, you know, wants to make it a little bit, you know, rough, a little bit of a rough fight with Broner to try to, you know, get away from Broner's speed and movement. But it's something to where, you know, a lot of people are going to be keeping their eyes on this fight. I've seen that there's something there where I think it's Steven Espinoza said he was going to be having his eyes on the fight as the whole thing with Broner's overall antics over the past 6 to 18 months to see where he's going to be at. I mean, and we've, you know, talked about it many times over that, you know, Adrian Broner has the ability, even at, you know, the 140-pound division, to be one of the most lucrative fighters in the sport. There are still a good group of fighters that are in, you know, 140, 135, that if they were able to fight Broner, it would be a fairly lucrative fight, you know, either on Showtime or on pay-per-view that, you know, it could happen. But it's just, you know, his, you know, out of the ring antics and in the ring antics that have prevented him from reaching that full potential. So, here, looks like, you know, he's just trying to see if he's going to be able to just get himself warm in the ring and, you know, get a little bit of work in here. This particular fight doesn't necessarily have a site yet, so we're going to be keeping our eyes and ears open as to where they're going to lock that up at. Next up here on the Premier Boxing Champion schedule is the pretty much the overall headliner for their announcement, and you know, it's something that, you know, we've, you know, pretty much expected. It's the welterweight unification fight between WBC champion Danny Garcia against the WBA champion Keith Thurman. They have this scheduled for March 4th, and it's going to be against the two guys that are within the top five in the welterweight division. So, with this unification fight happening, this the winner of this will probably be regarded as the number one guy in 147 pounds. And so you do have Danny Garcia there. He's only had a few fights at 147, but he's, you know, had good matchups and good fights along the way, even though he's had a few missed matches here and there. He will have an upcoming fight against Samuel Vargas in the next few weeks before this March 4th fight against Keith Thurman, but he should be able to get through that. This will, you know, that fight will be in his hometown there in Philadelphia. While Keith Thurman, I think he was nursing injuries after his decision victory over Sean Porter. So he'll just be focusing on the fight here against Danny Garcia. So we'll probably get into training mode after the winter season, well, after the close of the year here in November and December. So just looking at what's going on here, I mean, with this matchup, I said it after the Thurman Porter fight that if this fight was happening, that I would favor Keith Thurman. So just seeing here, what your thoughts are for this particular fight. I pretty much know what Mike Brady's going to say on it, but I'll get to him later. I'll start with World Rank.
So in terms of the Thurman Garcia, that's what you're referring to, the Thurman Garcia fight?
Yes.
So when I look at Danny Garcia, you know, he always steps up in his biggest fights. You know, he can get criticized a lot of times for who his opponents is in the non-important fight. I think people underestimate him because of those opponents. So I think his left hook is always a factor in any fight that he faces. Anybody that he goes up against, his left hook is always going to be a factor. I can't count him out until I see him lose. I know Thurman's undefeated too, but every time I doubt Danny Garcia, he always comes through. So, I just hope it happens. I can't wait till it happens. So I'm just ready for it.
All right, true. All right, Terrell, what you got?
I'm definitely favoring Thurman as well. And I mean, I'm a good fan of Garcia, but you know that butt's coming. I mean, I think Garcia's favorite win to me was probably either the Khan win, or probably more likely the his win against Maidana, because we know that throughout his career has been a pressure fighter, and Garcia, the best thing I like about Garcia besides his left hook. His ability to remain calm in a ring and not get wild, not get out of control, not get out of position. But going forward for this fight, I think the main storyline for me is going to be the fact that Garcia has not faced the top opposition at welterweight. And there's a difference between 140 and 147. I mean, just their size, weight, all those things like that. So Now, I know that he has this fight coming up against his whatever guy's name. Now, I'm going to tell you right now, with this fight that Garcia has coming up, I want him to be dominant. And he needs to be dominant, not only for us, but for himself against his guy. I mean, he needs to go and get the guy here within two, three. Get a couple rounds to work in, get some sweat going on in there, stuff like that. And that, get him out of there. And what I'm alluding to is the fact from Thurman's last fight with Porter. And kind of the same thing. We hadn't seen Thurman fight that top opponent yet, because Guerrero is not his top opponent, and some of the other people that Thurman's fought. But for this fight, for Thurman Porter, he showed that championship grit. He dug in when he got a guy that's coming to take your head off, you know, and was coming for it and coming for the title. We haven't seen that from Danny Garcia at 147. He has not been asked those questions by a top opponent, by a top five opponent. And he's certainly going to get this now. So I think that that's going to give Thurman the edge, as having been there with a top guy at 147. And that weight does matter. That aggression does matter. That strength does matter. So, I mean, I'm a fan of Danny Garcia, but for this one, I'm pulling with the grit and experience for Thurman. All
right, cool there, Terrell. All right, Mike Brady, what you got?
So you say you know what I'm going to say, huh?
Pretty much.
Okay, well, we'll see. I think the fight will play out exactly like this. Danny Garcia will keep sort of doing the backup thing so he can counter, and Keith Thurman will keep moving laterally. And Keith Thurman will move, touching, move, touching, until he lands something that sort of hurts Garcia, and Garcia either has to abandon, you know, that defensive style, or he just so far down that he got to, you know, just do something outrageous. But Thurman going to win off the movement, and Garcia won't be able to combat that, as we've seen with other boxers that he has faced. But it just so happens that the boxers that he faced not produce more fans, more money, more capital than Garcia is. Thurman can produce more capital than Garcia, so I don't see Thurman getting screwed over after he boxes Garcia and then turns that boxing into some offense.
My thing here with this Garcia and Thurman fight is that, I mean, I give, you know, Thurman the advantage here, like I did back in the day. So, I mean, it's like, you know, y'all have pointed out, Thurman has, you know, been there in the welterweight division much longer than Danny Garcia has. And, you know, while, you know, up to that point of the Sean Porter fight, that Danny Garcia has had bigger fights, in a couple of them, most notably against Mauricio Herrera and Lamont Peterson, he really didn't look like he was the winner in that particular fight. And you also saw, you know, the very good fight between Danny Garcia and Zad Judah there at 140 pounds, where basically Zad Judah fought his heart out, and, you know, could have pulled that out there, but wasn't able to. And then he had basically his key wins were against Americon and Lucas Matisse. And I often bring up the Matisse fight because, you know, leading up to that particular fight, I really thought that Matisse was going to run through Danny Garcia, mainly coming from the win that Matisse had over Lamont Peterson. But, you know, Garcia was able to pull that off and be the de facto number one guy there at 140 pounds. And so, you know, with that, he moved ahead and went up against Lamont Peterson, the catch weight of 143, and got tagged up a lot in that particular fight and still got the majority decision there. And then, you know, eventually got this win against Robert Ghost Guerrero to win the WBC welterweight title. But Thurman has been there, you know, at 147 for a while, and, you know, he's kind of, you know, teetering on the brink of, you know, being up there at 154 pounds. So to me, he's the much bigger guy in this particular fight, and he's going to use that size and that reach to tag up Danny Garcia there. You know, so I think that reach is going to be, you know, his advantage for Thurman, and he'll eventually get the victory over Danny Garcia to win the WBC and WBA welterweight titles. And so after that, there may be one more fight coming up later on in 2017 that may unify all of the major belts between Keith Thurman and the eventual IBF welterweight champion Errol Spence. And we're going to find out who will really be the best guy at 147 once that fight happens. And that's what I got to say on that. All right. Number to dial in once again for those that are listening. We have about less than 10 minutes in the live section of the show. So if you want to get in before overtime, call in at 347-237-5539. Once again, 347-237-5539. Press one key to get on cue and you'll be able to talk live on the show. Since this was mentioned here earlier, once we were going through the preview of a couple of the fights that were on the Premier Boxing Champions card, I wanted to, you know, go back to yesterday as we had a fight there between Alfredo Vasquez Jr. and Juan Manuel Lopez. And we were able to see that Juan Manuel Lopez was able to get the victory there over Alfredo Vasquez with the TKO there. And on one of the Facebook groups, I kind of posted the highlights of where that TKO victory happened for Wama and what happened immediately after that TKO victory, where Lopez was kind of like boasting about the TKO victory, and then the trainer for Vasquez Jr. came out there and I guess said something to Lopez, and Lopez stepped to him, and then he tried to swing at him, and then he did get caught with a good little left hook, and then he almost got caught with a left straight right too before they had to break him up. So you got him there floating around there at featherweight. He did lose to Jesus Cuellar back in 2014 by KO for the interim WBA belt. So he's floating there at featherweight, super featherweight. So he may either go back down to the featherweight division or stay there at super featherweight. But it was a fairly good fight with a even more interesting finish there. Let me see. I'm going to start with World Ranked if you were able to catch what was going on there with that fight the other day.
So I saw the knockout, and I seen the I just saw the ending of the fight. I didn't see the totality of the fight. But when I was going through yesterday, I was going through some sites. So on the site, it had odds for that fight, and it had Vasquez as a favorite, like 2-1 or something. And it had the under rounds at like $300 to make $100. I was like, it don't make sense because Vasquez is not a puncher, first of all.
Right.
So you're saying, basically what you're saying is Vasquez is supposed to knock Wama out. I didn't see it. You know, I didn't think, you know, that I guess Vasquez is good enough to knock Wama out. He's never proven that in any of his fights that, you know, he has that type of power.
Right.
I don't know, you know, I just see this fight as being Wama about to get lined up for some young guy, 126 or 130. I don't see anything more than that. I just see him, somebody's about to get a name on their, you know, on their notch as a defense or one of their belts. I didn't think much of it.
Gotcha. Yeah, I'm. I mean, we went through what they have there at featherweight, but I mean, super featherweight. There's, you know, still the, you know, guys there that you have, you know, Lomachenko floating around there. You have Sosa floating around there. Francisco Vargas, Orlando Salido still. You have the Axemen, of course, going up against Lomachenko. So it's still a lot of fighters there within that particular division that I don't think Wanma will be able to, you know, be a valid contender against. So I don't know, you know, what his future is going to be there at super featherweight. But I mean, he did get back in the game here with this TKO victory. All right, let's go with Terrell here. What you got?
Yeah, I mean, it's Juan Manuel Lopez. He's a favorite back in the day. They were trying to push him up and everything. He looked very promising until the fact that they found out that he does have a chin when Salido beat him the first time. And to a lot of people's chagrin, and Salido beat him again going forward. So that definitely show wasn't a fluke. And each one was by a knockout from that point. Juan Manuel Lopez definitely has a following down in Puerto Rico, stateside to a degree. If he can get another, you know, the guy's actually personable. You know, seems pretty cool and stuff like that. Not arrogant, not bozy, not show off, stuff like that. You know, so I wish the guy had a chance because he definitely has some, he has some good skills, you know. But I'm glad to see he got a win this past weekend. I'm actually watching the melee that was in the corner right now on YouTube. Pretty funny.
Yeah. Yep.
But I mean, all I say about that, I got a lot of Spanish fans, particularly Puerto Ricans. Puerto Rico is wild. Puerto Rico is crazy. And then you're throwing boxing on top of that, because boxing polarizes people left or right, negative or positive, and adds a bit of sensationalism to people as well. So people get emotional, and especially when you add that bravado of talking junk to somebody, because you're not going to talk no junk to my face. I'm sorry. I don't care who you are. I don't care how big you are, what you got, it don't matter. You ain't talking no mess in my face. So that happened, whatever. So it's just pretty funny. And just add that to a place like Puerto Rico, that's all those things are magnified even more. So it's not the norm down there, but when you just add all it in, all those facts together, you see why it happened. But it's pretty funny though. But I mean, I hope that Juan Ma gets a couple more fights. Hope he can make something out of himself and continue to get some wins and be relevant, because he has some skills. He does have good skills. Just no chin.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, not much of a chin to you know, really go through to have him be a valid contender there at the super featherweight division. All right, then, Mike Grady, what you got?
I didn't actually see the fight. I'd have to go and see it to give my comment from it. So I'm gonna not comment on this one.
All right, cool. All right, we got less than 90 seconds here on the live section of the show. We're going to get the overtime portion of the show here started here in a little bit, but if you want to get in to listen to it now, you can call in 347-237-5539, or you can just wait till the show ends, and then we'll have the full show available here on the MRN Broadcasting Channel on Blog Talk Radio. All right, coming up here on Saturday, we just had the full card here, of course, November 7th. You know, basically culminated with the main event for the WBO Welterweight Championship, or like I always say, the top-ranked welterweight championship between Jesse Vargas and Manny Pacquiao, being the main event there at the Thomas and Mack Center. We also have the WBO, the top-ranked super bantamweight championship on the line, with Nonito Donaire going up against Jesse Magdaleno. And like two more top-ranked titles will be on the line here in this card too. But these two are basically the feature belts at the Tavis and Max Center. We've pretty much gone over the Jesse Vargas Manny Pacquiao fight many times over. I think that, you know, if anything, people are just going to be later finding out if Jesse Vargas upset Manny Pacquiao there, because, you know, we really don't expect Vargas to get the win against Pacquiao going by his performance against Timothy Bradley a couple of years back. But just looking here, we have the super bantamweight fight here against with Nolito Donaire against Jesse Magdaleno. Magdaleno is there at 23-0 with 17 knockouts. Hasn't really fought anybody that's significant up to this point. So it's not really expected for him to get a win there against Nolito Donaire. But overall, just real quick, just want to get some thoughts about the card. I'm going to start with World Rank.
Card, I don't care anything for. I'm not going to watch it. Undercard is trash to me. The main event, you know, Jesse Vargas, even though his record doesn't show he has power, the last couple of fights late in or middle rounds and later the fight, his power is currying late in the fight. So my thing is, how much speed has Manny Pacquiao lost? That would be determining the difference is if it's a 12-round decision or if he actually loses. Because I think Jesse Vargas has a chance to beat him. I won't pick him, per se. I think it'll either be a Pacquiao easy 12-round decision or Jesse Vargas may get to him late. I really think he has a lot of motivation in this fight from the close chance that he had against Tim Bradley. He improved in the Saddam Ali fight. I think he has a real chance here, and I'm seeing him get better in fights. I don't know. Again, I don't know if it's enough to beat Manny. How much has Manny lost? What is his motivation to make this fight or to fight this fight? Is this his last fight? All these things come into play. You know, I really think Jesse Vargas has a good chance, though, just from the aspect of he's starting to get stronger later in fights, and we just don't know, you know, where Pacquiao is right now.
Yeah, I kind of see if it's being Pacquiao's last fight, if he loses. If he, you know, wins this fight, I think he's going to, you know, be able to extend his career a little bit. I just got to see, you know, what's going to happen as far as, like, the gate sales and the overall buy rate for this particular fight is, because I haven't really seen what the purse numbers are here for this particular fight, but I'm thinking that, you know, Pacquiao is trying to just get back, you know, into the game here, even though he earned, like, about, I think it was around $30 to $40 million in that fight against Floyd Mayweather. I think he's still, you know, is still out there trying to do fights and trying to, you know, get money there. So that's how I pretty much feel about that. Just go here with Mike Grady real quick, and then Terrell in reference to the particular card.
I'm not sure on the undercard. I don't know what's on the card, but the Pacquiao Jesse Vargas fight. I agree with World Rank in that this fight is totally dependent on Manny Pacquiao's motivation toward the fight. If Manny Pacquiao has high motivation, treats his fight as if Jesse Vargas has a viable chance to win, then it should be an easy fight for Manny Pacquiao. It should be Manny Pacquiao get in, get his punches off, and pretty much get out. Pretty much how he did Brandon Rios. It should be not exact format, because
Vargas is definitely faster than Rios, and I think his timing is even better, you know, than Rios. But you know, the speed differential should be there. So let's say the other scenario where Pacquiao's not very motivated, he didn't train hard enough, and he just feels like he can just jump out the bed and be like, I can beat this guy when I jump out the bed, not train, not work on how I feel later into the fight. And he hadn't worked on his win, and he gets winded later into the fight. Then, yeah, Jesse Vargas will touch him. Jesse Vargas will make him feel it, and Jesse Vargas can do something. I definitely think Vargas needs to go to the body earlier in the fight and invest into Pacquiao's body and make Pacquiao feel old. I mean, that's like, in my opinion, the only chance that Vargas has if Pacquiao is motivated. Do what Timothy Bradley did in the first fight. Go to the body, and then Pacquiao feel old toward the later in the fight. And, you know, maybe you can, you know, string some punches together and actually hurt Pacquiao. But it just really depends on Pacquiao's motivation toward the fight.
True, true. Yeah, I think that's going to be a huge factor there. And they'll show early in the first few rounds of this particular fight if Manny Pacquiao is going to be out there too. You know, basically get the win or just to try to get you to our ground. All right, Tura, what you got?
Yeah, I pretty much echo Top Rank sentiments and everything. I don't have a whole lot of interest in this fight, mainly for the reasons because I'm like, well, what is Pacquiao's motivation for this fight? Because we know he's a full-time senator back home in the Philippines. So if he wins, what's next for you? Because we already know he's already on record stating that the fact that in order to do that job back at home, it's a full-time job, and which has not allowed him to box and everything. So, I mean, if he wins, does he keep going forward and have his job suffer, or does he just get a win, maybe grab a belt, and kind of like, for what? My main thing, why are you doing this? Are you trying to redeem yourself from after the Mayweather fight? What's your motivation? Like I said, so not a whole lot of interest in this. Same thing. I don't even care to watch it at all. I mean, of course, I'll read about it. This would be it's boxing news from that point. Just like Mike said, Vargas does have a legitimate chance because the thing about it, we don't know how Pacquiao's going to look. I mean, I've read stuff in the past few weeks about when Pacquiao first got to L.A., he is reinvigorated, re-motivated, and stuff like that. And I've read stuff this past week that about he's busting up his training opponents in camp and stuff like that. And the typical fanfare that you hear in the lead-up to a fight and everything. He's not injured. He's busting up people. Okay, so let me see it. But like I said, really, I don't have a whole lot of interest in this because I don't know what's next for Pacquiao after this fight. You know, what's his motivation? Mm-hmm. He's going to keep fighting? If you are, I mean, what are you trying to do? Are you trying to go for a top opponent? What's next? So that's not a whole lot of interest.
Yeah. I mean, if the only thing that I would see as far as an end game after this fight is Pacquiao wins, is if he finally gives that title shot or the opportunity to have a pay-per-view against Terrence Crawford. Terrence Crawford does, you know, have a upcoming bout here where he's going to be defending the WBO and WBC light welterweight championships. But after that, I think he needs to get that opportunity to be the number one top guy there for Top Rank. Yeah, they were able to put something together for him to fight Victor Postol, but that one was showcased where he was much better than Postol and basically embarrassed Postol to get that win. So right now it's basically, you know, up to him getting that shot against Manny Pacquiao to prove that he should be the man there for Top Rank in the big stage. So that's what I'm getting out of that. Last thing here for this particular show is that we have another thing going on December 10th overseas, and that involves the IBF heavyweight champion, Anthony Joshua. And Anthony Joshua, you know, they're talking about seeing if they could get him a fight there at the Manchester Arena against a particular guy. They were looking at guys like Ramon Stavern, but Ramon Stavern is pretty much in line to fight for the number one spot in the WBC there against Alexander Povetkin. So you'll have, you know, number one Alexander Povetkin against number two Ramon Stavern there in the WBC. So he's out. And they were actually talking about getting a fight together between Anthony Joshua and Klitschko. But one of the things that was blocking that particular fight was to see if they could actually approve for the WBA heavyweight championship to be on the line for that fight. And one, the WBA didn't approve of it. And two, apparently they're saying that Vladimir Klitschko suffered an injury, so he's not able to make that December 10th card there against Anthony Joshua. So what's left there for Joshua is a fight against Eric Molina, who is currently ranked number 8 in the IBF rankings and is the Intercontinental Heavyweight Champion after getting a KO victory against Tomas Adamek. Of course, Eric Molina had a fight last year with Deontay Wilder in June of 2015 there in Alabama. So he's, you know, getting another shot to get a major heavyweight belt here. So just seeing what your thoughts here about this announcement of Anthony Joshua going up against Eric Molina here in the Manchester Arena. Maybe ended up on Showtime since Joshua did have that deal there on Showtime. So I'm going to start with Terrell here first.
Yeah, and we all share the same disappointment with Joshua, and Klitschko's not, that fight's not being realized. It's not going to happen, like I said, because Klitschko's not ranked in the IBF, so that's understandable. I mean, we've seen boxing organizations do worse things and make fights when it's all about the money, when the money's on the line. But so, I mean, it's a level of disappointment that didn't happen. And, I mean, even now, with the fact that Klitschko's injured, I really don't believe that. I just think that because that fight when Josh wasn't going down, I just gave a reason just for us to get him out of here for the rest of the year. So I'm not terribly disappointed because, obviously, I think that fight will happen early next year. As far as Joshua Molina, I mean, it's a placeholder fight for Joshua, you know. I mean, it's some other names out there within the IBF they could have got. Obviously, the Parker fight wasn't going to happen, even though that fight's been talked about all year. You got my man David Haye, who I like to call the fraud. This dude don't do nothing but just run his mouth and stuff like that, and never take a top fight, you know. Even at number 6 in the IBF, Carlos Takam, he just signed to fight. I forgot who, but he just signed to fight somebody else, a contender as well.
Johan Duopas.
Right. So that'll be an interesting fight to a degree. I mean, but like I said, for December 10th, it's just at this point.
It'll be Carlos Takam against Johan Duopas. That'll be scheduled for January 28th.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, so like I said, December 10th, and when they'll Klitschko, I mean, it's a placeholder fight, but it's like, my man, you wish that he could fight someone ranked in the top 10, you know, but it's a placeholder fight. I understand it, so move forward. Hopefully we can still get the IBF title match between Joshua and Klitschko going forward.
Yeah. All right, there, World Rank, what you got?
I'm disappointed of the choice of opponent. I mean, I'm very high on Joshua. I was high on him before he won the belt, before he was really noticed in the U.S. For this opponent, even though it's a tune-up fight, you know, there's plenty of people you can give a chance to. You can give
Dillian Whyte a rematch. It was a good first fight, you know. If you can't get Tyson Fury, get his cousin Huey Fury. You know, that's a decent fight for a tune-up. You know, yeah, Steve Cunningham, he's been robbed a few times in his last recent fight. Give him a shot at the belt, even though, you know, he may not deserve it, but he's been robbed so many times in his last couple of fights. Give him a shot. You know, it's a lot of, you know, it's a lot of fighters, you know, that could have got that opportunity. No disrespect to Erg Molina, but, you know, the last time we saw him, you know, he wasn't on, you know, that world-class level. So why are we giving him another title shot? You know, and you know, the Joseph Parker fight may or may not get made, but again, you know, both of these guys are not fighting anybody else. Why not fight each other? You know, I'm not saying every time you fight, you got to be, you know, a world-class guy, but two or three fights of nobody's, you know, to try to make one fight and then repeat that same pattern, you know, that's not a, you know, a good thing. So, you know, we keep regurgitating the same opponents. You know, make some new fights, some fresher fights. You know, they don't have. If you want them to be, you know, A side just showing off, that's decent. It's still opponents or decent enough opponents for that instead of regurgitating people who the last time we saw got knocked out.
Yeah, true that. All right, Mike Grady, what you got?
So who Anthony Joshua was supposed to fight? I was not listening to the beginning.
Well, I mean, we had possibly had Bermond Severn as a possible guy. Yeah, we actually had there were some people saying that maybe you would fight Huey Fury. So that was another one. David Price was, you know, a very vocal guy that wanted to have that fight against Anthony Joshua. And then the whole thing here with Vladimir Klitschko kind of fell through. So that's why we have here Anthony Joshua going up against Erg Molina at the Manchester Arena.
Okay.
Here on coming up on December 10th. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So I am disappointed in the fight, but I think him going against Erg Molina gives us a measuring stick for how. I mean, it's not one-to-one. We all know that, like, common opponents are not one-to-one. But, you know, it gives a measuring stick how he sort of do against the likes of a Deontay Wilder, because both of them having faced the same guy, you know, we'll see what it's like. Because it took Thurman maybe, like, 10 rounds to get rid of Molina, right?
Who? Wilder about 10 rounds. I think so.
Yeah, so... I mean, just to see how Anthony Joshua does. And then did Molina look good going into the later rounds as far as his win? I don't remember. But we'll see if the fight goes past, you know, round. Yeah, we'll see if the fight goes past round six or so, how Anthony Joshua looks. Because that's all I need to see. Like, does this man go past round seven and stuff? And then, you know, how vastly he slows down. And so maybe this a common opponent will take him there, you know, to these later rounds, because I want him to fight somebody like a Duopas. You know, I think Duopas would give him some trouble because, you know, that man was still in the fight with Deontay Wilder up until round 11, round 12. And, you know, just his win, man, that was crazy. I have a lot of respect for all that punishment he took. And then he still had to win to keep going. So I would hope that he would have fought an opponent like that to let everybody know that the durable guy that just keeps coming, he can chop them down and you know, and handle them. He need to fight that type of guy, not somebody who has deficiencies. He don't need to fight like a Chris Areola or nothing like that who can only hurt you with one punch. Fight somebody who's super durable that is going to take you, you know, 12 rounds before you get them out of there, that you just can't necessarily beat off knocking them out within round seven or so.
Yeah, see, it's interesting that you did, you know, mention Chris Areola, because that was the last fight that Deontay Wilder had, and that's all that happened with Deontay Wilder. But moving on with that, yeah, there were a good number of guys that Anthony Joshua could have fought, you know, with the exception of Joseph Parker. I thought a guy that would have been high on the list within the IBF is Kubrat Pulev. I mean, Pulev only has one loss to his his slate. So Pulev would have been a tall guy that he would have been able to fight. That may be somebody like a Duopa who's durable, that's there tall and, you know, will stand there and, you know, take with what Joshua has in him. And like you say there, Mike, probably would get it past the sixth round, and then you'll be able to see what Joshua will be able to do past that sixth round. You know, of course, you know, we talked about, you know, him possibly fighting Joseph Parker. Joseph Parker is the number one guy there in the IBF, but now Parker has been the number one guy in the WBO, and it's a possibility that he will be fighting for the vacant WBO heavyweight championship against Andy Ruiz. And the guy that unfortunately is next in line for that WBO belt is David Haye. So you may have Joseph Parker's next fight against Andy Ruiz, and the winner fighting David Haye here. So they're saying that that particular fight will also be on December 10th, and they'll be over in Australia. So you'll have a lot of fights there on December 10th with a lot of belts on the line. So you'll have two heavyweight belts on the line there on December 10th. And you may also see another fight for the WBA regular heavyweight championship, but I don't think that fight has been solidified yet, between Lucas Brown and Shannon McCannon. So you may see a lot of shakeup within the heavyweight division before the end of this year, to try to iron things out as far as like who will be the top guys to look forward to in 2017. But here with Anthony Joshua, I think this is going to be a stay busy fight here against Eric Molina, and that he should be able to, you know, get through this with little to no problems. If it does get to the sixth round, then maybe we'll, you know, keep our eyes open with that. But otherwise, I think he should be able to pull that off. Another notable thing there within the heavyweight division, Luis King Kong Ortiz has an upcoming fight with Malik Scott, and he signed under Matchroom Boxing Eddie Hearn. So they do have him being the head guy there. This is going to be in Monte Carlo. So Luis Ortiz is going to be going up against Malik Scott, and they're seeing if he's going to also be included in the undercard for the Anthony Joshua Eric Molina fight. So there's some things where he might be able to get in there as a potential opponent for Anthony Joshua, but for that to happen, he would have to be included in the IBF rankings by next year. So that's something that we'll be looking into there within the heavyweight division. It's going to be a very busy few months there to try to sort a few things out. With that being known, pretty much going to close out this episode of the Boxing Source Radio Show. Be sure to catch the next version of it on Sunday night, 7:30 as usual. And catch our sister shows here on the MRM Broadcasting Channel, first with the Cohort Truth on Sports with the execution of Matthew Long, Tuesday nights at 8:30 p.m. And on Wednesday at 8:30 p.m., we have the CMT Firestone Football Talk Show with Cali Mike, Chi-Town Clausell, Mathis, Tony Watley, and also myself. I kind of get in there as well. So we have a full slate of shows here on the MRN Broadcasting Channel for you to catch in. We'll have the podcast of this show available later on for people to listen to. And like I say, at the end of every show, the point of boxing is to hit and not get hit, not to stand and trade. On that note, I'm out. Have a good evening.
Go Raiders.
Ah, true.